The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media and the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. Welcome back to the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. I'm Ken Napsuk, along with Joe Ruggiero, our Attitude Era expert. And here is our look at the influential, historic, and iconic Attitude Era of the World Wrestling Then Federation. This is episode 2. Joe, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad you came back.
Yeah, well, you know, all I had to do was wash your car for a week and got back.
Now you're here.
Really, I appreciate that. Could you please stop going off-roading before I have to clean your car?
How else am I going to get to indie shows?
That's a good point. That's a very good point.
So let's just dive right in.
Sounds good. Feet
let's
first,
get
baby.
To the main event. Let's Last time... It. On episode 1 of the retrospective of the Attitude Era, we covered the fabled beginnings.
Yes.
How the Monday Night Wars or the start of WCW's dominance kind of spawned the Attitude Era, and how Austin 316, the Montreal Screwjob, the arrival of DX, the formation of Mr. McMahon, the Nation of Domination swirling around there as well, too. And this all formed into the fever pitch that was WrestleMania 14 when Iron Mike Tyson got involved, turned on Shawn Michaels, boom, knocked him out, and the Attitude Era was there. Or as Jim Ross said, Stone Cold, Stone Cold, Stone Cold, the Austin Era has begun, or something like that.
Yeah, that's a...
So now,
sort of good impression.
Sort of. It's something.
Got the gist of it.
It's like a little Bush, a little Ross.
Yeah.
Let's pick up WrestleMania 14 and where we're at with that, and the DX now kind of moving to the forefront as Bret Hart's long gone now. He's in WCW, and Austin, of course, is battling injuries, but he's still leading the charge, so to speak, there. And you have Mr. McMahon. Pick it up there, Joe.
Yeah. So you have the next night on Raw.
Yeah.
After WrestleMania 14, talking about Degeneration X, Triple H comes out, kind of he boots HBK from Degeneration X because he's let the team down, so to speak, and but introduces the new members of Degeneration, the returning X-Pac, who came back from WCW. We gave them Diesel and Razor Ramon, and they gave us back X-Pac.
They gave us back, and he was working at six for a
long
while.
Yes, he was six in WCW.
A delicious play on 1-2-3 Kid.
Yes, and now he's X-Pac. And also joining the ranks was at the time tag team champions, the New Age Outlaws, Road Dogg, Jesse James, and the Badass Billy Gunn.
Which are two, I cannot call them underrated. They're certainly one of the more popular tag teams of all time.
Yes.
But, you know, they're not, we grew up in the era where tag team wrestling meant you wore matching outfits.
Yeah.
And they really didn't do that. The color schemes might have been similar, but they were two different style of wrestlers that formed up into an entertaining group that at the time, I got to admit, at the time, wasn't a huge fan of New Age Outlaws. Again, we talked about episode 1. This is about the time I kind of drifted away from professional wrestling, as all fans kind of seem to do from time to time, and then you come back.
And you picked a really weird time
I missed the golden age, according to you.
It's kind of like saying you love Batman, but you haven't seen The Dark Knight yet.
Okay. I'll get around to it.
I'll
catch it on Netflix.
No need to rush, but you know,
New Age Outlaws, for some reason, for me, Badass Billy Gunn, well, he was the roadie. You know what I mean? Like he was, I just seen him in that story. Now he's in this tag team. And I just didn't gravitate to him. Now, looking back, when they came back for a little short appearance a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was like, I would want them on TV every week.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping it would lead to a recurring theme. I'm the same way. I never really liked, you know, I remember the Smoking Guns with Bart and Billy.
Absolutely.
And Jesse James, Road Dogg never really... Right. Got into him, and they were an okay, but yeah, then they joined DX.
Right.
Then they started doing their intro, dun, dun, dun. Oh, you didn't know?
Yeah.
All that, and You know, it definitely worked.
And that's what happens sometimes in wrestling is you're going one direction, suddenly a little switch, a little turn, maybe an outfit change. I always say Cody Rhodes adding the knee pads propelled his career forward.
It did.
a little change, something, and then you sync up. And then, because remember, these are performers. These are athletes and performers. And so chemistry starts to grow. Things start to work. Things start to click. And that definitely seemed to click.
Yeah, and they
it's those two guys in DX,
and they were definitely and I'd say this about all of them, even Triple H at the time, mm-hmm. In China and God knows X-Pac. You know, by themselves they would never have been right. in that spot that they got in, but because they were D-Generation X,
yeah,
there was still kind of the specter of Shawn Michaels hanging over them. Sure. Although that did go away pretty quick. I mean, they really yeah. kind of made it their own. And you know, quite frankly, they kind of shifted things. They weren't really the out and out, you know, sexual innuendo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're still, but they're, you know, now they were just kind of those prankster right. dicks who were going to come in and just mess with stuff.
They were in your face.
They were in your face,
in your house, and in your face.
That's right. They, you know, and it was really as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
They all work together, and right. you know, they would have by themselves. They could have never done that, but as a whole, they were real. They were great. They were mm-hmm. they were the top faction, you know. So, and they, you know, as they slowly turned face, mm-hmm. you know, and eventually were the faces in the against the Nation of Domination in that feud. You know, they were the jokers, the prank, and they were as big. You know, they mm-hmm. were just right there under Austin. As far as getting the crowd reaction and what level they were at.
And you mentioned, you know, factions and yeah. stables in wrestling. Stables are a staple of wrestling.
Yes.
And at that time, though, a lot of people you were trying for, because you had NWO,
yeah.
which was perhaps still, I would call, the greatest stable of all time.
Certainly,
just for the impact and what it did to change the game, because everything was there. It seemed like you wanted to try to do that. So you had several stables and groups forming like no other time that I can remember in wrestling. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the new Hart Foundation or the Hart Dynasty that they tried, and then the Nation of Domination.
Yeah,
Los Barriquas. Barriquas. I'm saying
Barriquas.
You had that chains that biker and yeah. eight ball.
Yeah,
and Ellerling leading that group.
Yeah, I don't even remember what that. But yeah, they were like the biker gang
the biker
or something.
Gang. So you had that, and then of course WCW's, you know, trying to ape their own success by branching off NWO, Wolfpack, and mm-hmm. Latino World Order, and then even in ECW you got the Blue World Order,
yeah.
which was a delicious take and parody of it all. But of rising above all of those, outside of the original run of NWO,
yeah definitely, I'd say DX, yeah,
Generation
absolutely.
X. So there obviously was something there. They weren't just the mindless pranksters. They had something going on, though. That was definitely the image.
Yeah.
So the difference in your mind, do you think? Again, we talked about how what would have happened if Michaels had been around and not been hurt,
mm-hmm.
but this was definitely a positive thing for the group. Right.
Absolutely. It. I mean, the clearest result of their elevation and their work was Triple H's eventual rise. You know, to the guy that he was, that he is. Well, is today.
Yeah. He has risen.
He has risen. But yeah, you know, they were those guys that mm-hmm. that aside from Austin, you came to see.
Yeah.
You know, along with Undertaker. Kane was around it by now.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, again, I mentioned the last show how I went to an event. The main event was the New Age Outlaws against Austin and Taker for the okay. tag titles. It was a great match, and mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't booing anybody in that
right.
match.
The Attitude Era had so many great workers and so much.
Yeah.
I mean, it was you look back, it is amazing to think. The amount of players they had to choose from
yeah.
on a daily basis.
Their roster, mm-hmm. yeah. They had a real deep bench. Absolutely,
they had a deep bench.
If you go to the sports ball reference, they absolutely did, and they stopped saying, you know, trying to say this is a good guy,
mm-hmm.
this is a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
They really just pretty much said, here they are, decide for yourselves,
mm-hmm.
and you know, which Austin was kind of the. the leader, you know, the first, I mean, Piper was the first, really, but, yeah.
In a way, but even Piper, but, you know, even Piper was a bad guy, then he came back at the WrestleMania 3 cheering, you know, even, it was, we didn't know what to call it back then. A tweener was, did not exist.
Yeah, that didn't happen, but, you know, Zeus for the Austin era, or, you know, the Attitude era, Austin was kind of the mold, the template, if you will. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, it wasn't a, here's a definitely good guy, here's a definitely bad guy. They all kind of had an edge to them.
Right.
And it what made you successful was where you took that edge. And mm-hmm. and DX, you know, transformed from the kind of pervy frat guys to just the troublemakers.
Right.
Who are just going to mess with you. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're kind of their defining moment, of course, is when they, you know, jumped on that army tank or army jeep and drove over the you know, Raw and Nitro were in the same town. They were, I think, 20 miles from each other. And they jump in a army jeep and rode over to the Nitro stadium and were outside with their bullhorn going, "Hey, let us in, free diesel." And
that is probably their iconic image of that. And we talked about last episode of the early portion, the early chapter of the Attitude Era, what are some iconic images? And I put forth the Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and Sergeant Slobber storylines. But really, if you have to choose one, DX, Attitude Era, what do you think? You think of the Jeep, the cannon, the camouflage, and the bullhorn.
Yeah.
Charging, knocking down the door of WCW.
Yeah, I mean, almost making it in the door. I mean, they're going down the ramp as somebody's closing the door on them. I mean, literally closing the door on their face, like before the Jeep can get in. And I mean, can you imagine if they'd got it in?
Yeah,
could have been a legit, if they'd made it in the building.
Could have been a legit Pier 6 brawl at that point.
Absolutely,
but that's what the Attitude Era at its best, and it definitely could had some worst, but at its best was that type of stuff, the unhinged, crazy, what am I watching? And here's these guys really blurring the lines. And again, you know, having seen what we just went through with the Outsiders, Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, you know, you're like, is this some kind of crossover? What's happening here? You didn't really know.
Yeah, and you know, and as Degeneration X, because, you know, when it was HBK, Triple H, and China, you know, they were the heels. They were the bad guys. And shortly after WrestleMania 14, this iteration as a whole kind of turned face. And so, you know, now they're not, you know, now they're the fun guys. They're right. You know, so they're there for your amusement. They're there for your entertainment. Right. If their iconic moment isn't the Army Jeep, it's their Nation of Domination parody. Which is
that's another great one.
I mean, that I would put the Jeep first. Absolutely.
Sure, the Jeep has a legacy.
But this is a real close second. You know, and granted, perhaps in hindsight, a little horribly inappropriate with X-Pac and Triple H and blackface. But you know,
again,
but that's not
different era.
It was a different time.
And what about their feud with The Undertaker? Was that kind of a big launching point too?
Yeah, the feud with The Undertaker was. When it was Shawn Michaels going against The Undertaker, HBK had pissed off Undertaker during a match. He refereed a match between Undertaker and Bret for the title,
right?
And they kind of hated each other. Then once Bret left, then it went back to Shawn against Undertaker. Feud, you know, they had their feud. They had the initial Hell in a Cell match,
right?
Leading to the debut of Kane,
I
believe a 5-star match given by Mr. Meltzer, and then at the Royal Rumble was when he had a casket match, Undertaker and HBK, and HBK did a flippy flop move,
destroys his
back on the edge of the of the casket, and it sucks because it's a really fun match, and it's a really good match. So I've watched it a lot of times, and it's you know it's coming. It happens pretty early on in the match, actually, and the second he hits, you're just like, there it is.
There's his career changing forever.
Yeah, and his, you know, he screwed his back up. He after that match, the only match he really wrestled was the main event against Austin.
And WrestleMania 14,
I don't think he really could do anything.
And then he went away for a while.
Yeah, and that feud with The Undertaker is, you know, it's again these things happening by accident. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't had that feud, maybe he didn't have that casket match. Maybe he doesn't break his back. And so then maybe DX don't become the goofy good guys.
Right.
To, you know, in between WrestleMania 14 and 15 and become this, you know, below Austin,
right,
that upper mid card great stable that everybody likes with X-Pac.
When did you think that it started to turn for them in the sense of enough was enough? When it started to die out in your mind, was there any point?
Well,
we're jumping ahead in our storyline here with the Attitude Era, but let's just talk about DX now.
Well, they rode pretty strong for that year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know,
all the way to 15, WrestleMania 15?
I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, because again, they were still kind of the jokey guys, mm-hmm, and it hadn't quite, I mean, maybe that was, you know, if anything, that maybe the month or so leading up to that was the beginning of that end. But then at WrestleMania 15, when Triple H turned on them and joined the corporation.
Right.
And then they, you know, because then they just kind of started flopping back and forth. First, they're still with him, and they're acting as the corporation's stooges, but then they're kicked out of the corporation, so now they're faces, but it's just the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac, and no one really cares about them as much.
Right, right.
And, you know, and so they're kind of waffled back and forth. And so I think, you know, at best, the, you know, the pretty much the golden age of DX,
mm-hmm,
you know, would be that time between WrestleMania 14 and 15, and, you know, that's pretty much where it begins and ends with them. Because once they started splintering and breaking up and being the bad guys, and, you know, it just didn't work as well.
That's a good run, and it's also, if you're really taking them back to, let's say, after, between WrestleMania 13 and 14, mm-hmm, they form.
Yeah.
Now from 14 to 15, and you kind of say maybe by 15 when Triple H turns and starts becoming the cerebral assassin.
Yeah.
That's a two-year run. That's a flash in the pan, really. But in wrestling terms, that's a long time.
To a lot of people, that's a career.
That's a long time. That's a good run.
And it, you know, I mean, the New Age Outlaws, you know, how many, I mean, they probably was 6-7-time tag team championship. Mm-hmm. Triple H at that point, you know, I think he had the Intercontinental belt a couple times, mm-hmm, even X-Pac, European champ, and also tag team champion alongside Kane.
Right.
Which was an interesting team, actually.
I enjoyed that.
Yeah, no, that wasn't, you know, again, I'm not saying they didn't have any good moments after 15.
Right.
But it wasn't really DX anymore.
By that time, because we're jumping ahead, but to WrestleMania 16, which WrestleMania 2000, as it's called.
Yes.
I'm holding it in my hand now, the DVD. I'm like, man, in every corner, fatal four-way elimination match. By that point, Triple H...
Triple H was long gone.
Steph.
Yeah, he's with Stephanie. He's really one of the most hated men in the whole industry.
And I'm sure
if X-Pac was even on the card, it was, you know, was he even on it?
It's hard to say because this doesn't list the entire card. Maybe he was part of the first ever 13-man hardcore battle royal.
You know, he probably could have been.
But so by that time it's done. But what an influential run. And people have tried to do it, and even DX themselves kind to trying to do it when Triple H and Shawn. But even that was entertaining in a different light.
Yeah,
it was a little bit of a nostalgia run. But it had
a fun nostalgia run the first couple times, and then it was like, okay, you're in your 40s. And I mean, you know, Shawn Michaels, now he's a, you know, born-again Christian, so he won't do the official DX chop because he doesn't want to do anything around his privates.
Yeah,
so he just kind of does like a V on his stomach, and it's just not...
Yep, and then, but the reunion...
And then they fought cheerleaders for a year, like, yeah. But
the reunion, I thought, was a fun, again, a nostalgia pop, but it was fun.
Yeah.
It was fun to see him come back out.
And that, I mean, what was that? Was that WrestleMania No, it wasn't 19. No, it must have been 21 or 22 or something, where like they both did the DX chop during their respective matches, and you know, so then the following like weeks and months, people were like, "Oh my God, is DX coming back? Is DX coming back?"
Right,
and then so, they do it, and everyone's like, "Yeah!"
So yeah, it's definitely fun to harken back to that. But they had a great run. You mentioned though during that time the feud with Nation of Domination, and we mentioned that before. So Nation of Domination forms, and you know I'm trying to remember the original formation of it.
The original formation, it was Farouk. Also known as
Ron Simmons, kind of
Simmons.
He was kind of the leader.
Yeah, he was the leader, and then, and actually, the original Nation of Domination.
Mm-hmm.
This is what led to all those other factions that we mentioned. It was Farouk, Chains, the Immortal Savio Vega,
right,
and it was either D'Lo or Mark Henry. D'Lo, I believe.
Yeah, D'Lo Brown,
and that was the original Nation, and it kind of sputtered and kind of sucked. So Farouk fired Chains and Savio. They went off, and that's when Chains formed his
Biker
whatever that was called again. And honestly, now it's going to bug me. I'm going to have to look that up the second we get off and find out what that damn stable was called. And then Savio went off and formed Las Boricuas.
Mm-hmm.
He kept D'Lo. And then I think the next iteration he brought in was Mark Henry. It was either Mark Henry or Kama, or it was Mark Henry and Kama.
And Kama Mustafa.
And you know, and they were basically, it was like a combination Black Panther Nation of Islam thing. You know, and they would come in, they'd have their salute, and he would talk about being kept down by the white man. And but then this other guy joined who people listening may have heard of.
Yeah.
By the name of Rocky Maivia.
Little guy.
Little dude. I mean, he didn't join initially. He came in as Rocky Maivia, this blue chipper, this third generation, happy-go-lucky superstar. Oh,
by the way, I've looked it up. Disciples of Apocalypse.
Thank you. God, yes. Disciples of Apocalypse. Man, they sucked.
Yeah. So that happened. Sorry.
That
so Rocky Maivia. Yeah.
Rocky Maivia.
Comes out of Survivor Series. Yes. 1996.
Looking like a blue pineapple.
Yeah.
And he was kind of one of the last guys where management was kind of saying, okay, fans, here's a good guy. Root for him.
We
root
talked
for
about
this guy. We like this guy.
And that's 1996. Yeah, and we talked about that era. That is still the leftover portion of the new generation where everything was prepackaged. And, you know, Vince at one point could you know, say, hey, I'm going to a Viking. We're going to call him Berserker. And he's really just going to be a, you know, takeoff of Bruiser Brody. But it's going to be, you know, a comical version. And people will like it. There will be action figures. So Steve Austin kind of broke that with the Austin 316 thing, as we discussed. But yeah, you're right. Rocky Maivia was shoved down our throats.
Yeah,
he had no chance of success at that point. I mean, sorry for him.
Yeah, he'd come, you know, with this big goofy grin on his face, going, "Hey, everybody, doing?"
The blue chipper,
Everyone's loving him. You know, he wins the Intercontinental Championship, and you know, from Hunter Hearst Helmsley, not Triple H yet, Hearst Helmsley on Monday Night Raw. But just no F's were given by anybody.
And I was a fan of Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas as a tag team in my really, really early days of watching wrestling. So I was like, oh, cool, Rocky's son.
Yeah.
Rocky Maivia, okay. And then, I don't know. But then he joins the Nation of Domination.
Yeah, and that's when stuff gets real awesome.
Because
towards the end of his babyface run, the fans just start out and out turning on him.
And
there's signs and they're chanting, "Die, Rocky, die."
Right.
To, again, this guy who's smiling and he loves the fans. He's, you know, he's cutting a promo about like, "Hey, everybody, I'm Rocky. Hey. Die, Rocky, die." And he just stands there taking it with this big stupid grin on his face. But then finally, he by the grace of God, he's allowed to turn heel.
Right.
He turns heel. He joins the Nation of Domination, rebrands himself as The Rock.
Yes.
And a legend is born.
Literally.
Yeah.
Just right then and there.
Yeah. I, you know, as I said last time You know, when you're ranking the Attitude Era guys, Austin's number one, obviously, and then number two, The Rock.
Yeah.
And he did some amazing things with the Nation of Domination. He starts referring to himself in the third person. You know, people kind of forget a lot of his now, you know, famous catchphrases and stuff. He was doing as a heel to piss people off initially.
Right.
Like, the whole, finally, The Rock has come. Like, that was him going, lucky you. You get to see me.
Right.
I'm such a great star. And people hated him.
And he had an early match with Stone Cold at In Your House Degeneration X that lasted about 6 minutes.
Yeah,
you know, no idea what was to come with between those two.
Yeah, no, they had this like quick little feud because you know Austin as we you know he'd had his neck injury and then he came back and he had got his belt back and then the next night actually after that 6 minute match, you know, McMahon told him he had to turn the belt back over. And Austin throws it in a river.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was the first of many wrestling objects to get thrown into a river.
So around the time of WrestleMania 14 is when Rock kind of overthrows Farouk as a leader of the Nation of Domination, taking that to the next level.
Yeah, he took Farouk out. So it was, you know, it was him, comma, Mark Henry, and D'Lo.
Yeah.
Later to be joined by Owen Hart.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah,
he became the co-leader of the Nation,
right?
Which was weird, but
as
it was Owen Hart, it was also awesome.
Yeah,
of course. And the Nation and DX had this great feud,
right?
Of course, spotlighted by some really great matches between The Rock and Triple H.
Right.
Probably the best known match is their ladder match at SummerSlam, and I believe it's in Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. They also had a 2 out of 3 falls match at Fully Loaded that was really good, and it's crazy to go back and look and you know here are these two future legends.
Yeah.
As you know, but just that upper mid card because Austin's on top.
But again, the Attitude Era, I think, allowed for this change in Dwayne Johnson to happen.
Yes.
Because now he's saying things that you just couldn't have said on television. You know, Austin's doing it too, flipping the bird and all that stuff, but, you know.
Rock's talking about shoving things in people's butts.
Yeah. And just wouldn't have happened even 3 to 4 years earlier.
No. You never heard Hogan talking about sticking things in people's butts and turning them sideways.
No, he's not on camera.
Talking about pie and, all that crazy, you know, highbrow raising.
It was great to watch the last couple of years when The Rock comes back to the PG era and just kind of throws that out the window and bleepity bleeped all over the place. I was rewatching his fight with Punk at Royal Rumble from last year.
Yeah.
And there's like an entire like minute they just bleep out because he's cursing up a storm in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, hell, I remember his first promo when he came back and just ripped Cena and just the next day everybody was like, oh my god, remember when that used to happen every week? Remember when and not just happened every week but everybody was doing that?
Yeah,
like, you know, it wasn't just The Rock being awesome, like everybody, you know, Triple H was cutting awesome promos, you know, The Rock was, Austin of course was the man, you know, just such high quality stuff.
So he goes in that feud with DX, and that's kind of carrying it all through 98. What's he doing around WrestleMania 15? Where's he at? Do you recall?
WrestleMania 15, he's walking in the champ.
Is he?
Yeah, okay. What happened, kind of the feud with DX kind of peaked at SummerSlam, you know, and he loses the Intercontinental belt to Triple H. In this ladder match, and he breaks away from the Nation, kind of starts riding solo because at that point he was the cool bad guy, and you know he was getting face reactions. So they kind of slowly start turning him face, and they're slowly turning him face, and heading into Survivor Series of 1998, the world title is vacant. And so there was a tournament the night of Survivor. I mean, there was a tournament leading up to it on Raw and stuff. But at Survivor Series, Mr. McMahon's handpicked guy, who is Mick Foley, Mankind, goes up against the now People's Champion, The Rock, the second most over guy in the company. And in the main event at Survivor Series 1998, Rock locks Mankind into a sharpshooter, and McMahon calls for the bell to ring prematurely. And oh my God, look at that. He's done it to us again. Rock turns uber heel. I mean, like, as much as people hated him when he was with The Nation, like, he was just public enemy number one after this. Just everyone hated him. He becomes the corporate champion. And so heading into WrestleMania 15, you got Austin going through hell and high water to get that spot at WrestleMania, because, you know, he didn't win the Rumble because McMahon did. And then he couldn't win his spot back because McMahon screwed him up. And but then Commissioner Shawn Michaels gives Austin his title shot at WrestleMania 15, and The Rock, the corporate champion, walks in to face Stone Cold Steve Austin and had a heck of a match and got his ass kicked.
And Austin wins.
Yeah,
Austin and wins. One of the highlights of Rock's career is that feud with Mankind.
Yes.
And I don't think it's definitely in the Attitude Era, but it's, again, one of those things. The Attitude Era goes for a long enough amount of time that you that when you hear the term Attitude Era, you you think of the Austin 316 and the, and the screw job and the moments we've talked about. But you can't overlook Mankind versus The Rock.
No, they had a very heated and very, you know, like, hard-hitting, I mean, God knows. Yeah, God knows those matches that they had would not be had today with all the concussion stuff.
The Royal Rumble Quit match.
Yeah, where he, you know, by the end of it, Rock's got Mankind handcuffed, hands behind his back, and just wails on him with a chair, hit him like something like 22 times in the head with a steel chair. I mean, yeah, just brutal, brutal matches. They had, I think, a ladder match. I think they had a boiler room match. They had their halftime heat match in an empty arena.
Empty arena match,
which was special. Yeah, no, they, you know, because while they were having had Austin on one side, you know, again, as we were saying, the, you know, Austin McMahon rivalry really bled into everything. You know, and here's Rocky, and they traded the title back and forth. They, you know, one of the, certainly one of the best moments of Mankind's career, you know, Mick Foley's, is that night on Raw where he's facing Rock for the title. And first DX comes out to, it was kind of a lumberjack match. He had DX on one side and he had the corporation on the other side. And his whole schmoz fest starts happening and Austin comes out, whacks Rock in the head with the belt and puts Mankind on him and pins him, and Mankind wins the belt. And that was also the night Tony Schiavone was over on Nitro going, yeah, well, that'll put asses in seats, and everyone changed the channel.
And let's talk about that, because so we're at that point in the game there, and that was people. It's easy to look back now, and we kind of alluded to the start of you know, the WCW taking over as the top draw, and time has an interesting way of both putting things in perspective, but also you forget what it was like to live at that on a daily basis as a wrestling fan. WCW was just dominating.
Yeah.
It was winning in the ratings like nothing else.
Yeah.
Because we were only 10 years removed from the golden age, so Macho and Hogan still had value to the people who hadn't continued watching into the new generation. Yeah. They didn't know who Shawn Michaels was or Bret Hart. They remembered Hogan and Macho, and then Piper comes back and everything, and people are watching.
And as even though he should have probably stopped doing it years ago, you forget, at its inception, the Crow version of Sting was as over as anything.
Yeah. Huge.
Know, him up in the rafters, you know, dropping down to beat people up and then going back up. And then, you know, and their epic match at Starrcade. You know, with Sting and Hogan, where Sting hadn't wrestled in a year, and, you know, was the this dark warrior.
And so they built that up, and so things are going, but so all that we've been talking about is building and building and building, But Nitro's still Nitro. It's still winning. It's still the most watched, you know, television program on cable. And
82 weeks in a row.
WWF is still playing catch-up, though they're doing a great job by now. Then it takes this one fateful moment that is not Tony Schiavone's fault, because I'm sure someone in the headset's yelling at him to say it.
Yeah. Then they get cocky.
And exactly, it's the way to say it. And, oh, that's going to put some butts in the seat and click.
Yeah. Yeah, as you know, as we told you last time, they like to give away the WWF results at the top of their show. So to
which
open
was a
the
brilliant
show,
tactic at first,
which was great at first, but then because the Mankind character at that time was talk about a sympathetic baby face.
Mm-hmm.
This guy who he had been manipulated by Mr. McMahon, mm-hmm. Been made to think like you're my guy. When all the time it's just a big swerve for everybody. Now he's going up against The Rock, who is the most loathed man in all of professional wrestling, mm-hmm. because he was just about to, really hit that ceiling as the secondary top face. Like, everybody's wanted to love him so much, and then he just crapped all over him. So he had this awesome moment. And then they open Nitro, and he goes... over on that other program, Mick Foley's going to win their world title. That'll put us in seats. And they've said, many on all the documentaries and stuff, like literally everyone watching that was like, ooh.
Switched.
And, I can't say I remember specifically, but I would imagine I did too, because,
So what happens is now the Attitude Era pays off.
Yeah,
now
they start winning.
Boom, they've got the ball, and they are just pounding it down, and WCW is making mistakes after mistakes after mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other show and a great book, like I mentioned before, The Rise and Fall of WCW. So now all the work that has happened and all the chemistry, I think the Attitude Era is so much about chemistry of these mm-hmm. great performers at the top of the game, at their peak.
Yeah.
Finding ways to work with each other, and it's just magic almost every time. I mean, again, we're going to talk about in episode 4 some of the bad things.
Yes. We assure you we're not looking back at everything with rose-colored glasses.
No, absolutely not.
There's a lot for all they did right, there's a lot they did wrong.
Well, and what I think, too, is you look back, you can't this is such a golden age of wrestling to me, even better than the 80s, because, again, it transcended into pop culture.
Yeah.
I know people who are general managers of malls and stuff like that. This one guy I'm thinking, if you saw him, you'd be like, that guy's never seen a wrestling match in his life. Huge, to this day, huge Rock fan.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, dude, we talked about it every day, every Tuesday morning at our staff meetings, me and these guys, we were talking about it. We're like at the time in our 30s, now they're in their late 40s. But yeah, I mean, people, it brought in, and then there's the whole thing, the genius. At this point, the first time he'd really seen it on this big of a scale is Mr. McMahon, the boss everyone hates.
Yeah.
Everyone can relate to that. Now, of course, they still try to go to that well one too many times. How many times can we see that in wrestling? And not just in WWE, but everywhere else, too. Dixie Carter. But at the time,
she tries.
It was fresh. It was like, horrible, spoiled McMahon family. We want to see them get, but they're, we kind of like Shane.
Yeah. Here comes Linda. The money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Linda. Yeah. No, as I've said, like you know, Austin's going to kick McMahon's ass.
Right.
And you know he's going to kick the crap out of whoever else. McMahon. I mean, there were these matches where it was like, all right, well, it'll be Rock against it'll be Austin against The Rock, Triple H, and Undertaker. No mm-hmm. DQ, with Vince and Shane as special referee and Pat Patterson and a kendo stick as the mm-hmm. timekeeper. And Austin would win. And you'd be like, yes!
Yeah.
He triumphs over evil.
So they're hitting home runs. They're taking over. Now, like I said, it is paid off. Now, we're going to build up a little bit to WrestleMania 16, but WrestleMania 2000. Because it was the future. But before we do that, there's some things I want to branch off and discuss here. I'm looking at this card, which, again, was held in April of 2000. Attitude Era is in, you know, by 98 it's official, but by 96, 97 it's working. So we're about 5 years in here.
Mm-hmm.
There's some key players that don't get talked about enough in terms of them being part of this era, but they were.
Yeah. So they weren't necessarily front runners, but then they were the
right.
They were the rest of the 2 hours. Well,
and they're part of the legacy, and why, again, we talk about depth and people working in a different
they're
era.
Part of that bench.
Different era where now, back then, creative wasn't something there, you know. And one of those people I want to talk about is Chris Jericho.
Yes.
Who came to prominence, I mean, I remember when he started Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but comes to prominence in WCW as one of those light heavyweight flippity-flop guys.
Yeah.
Does the great list of holds.
Oh, I loved, yeah.
One of my favorites.
The list of holds. Him, one of my, probably my favorite Jericho WCW moment was when he had a pseudo feud with Goldberg that Goldberg never actually participated in. But so he does this takeoff of Goldberg's entrance, and he's getting escorted to the ring by Ralphus.
Yeah.
And I forget what city he's in, but he's like, "What's up, Omaha?" And he'll open a door, and it's like out to the parking lot. Be like, "What? No, where?" And he like can't find the ring. He's walking. It takes him like 10 minutes to get to the ring. It was amazing.
So Jericho has again that attitude that is needed in the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
So he comes over quite famously with a count on the clock, and we don't need to rehash that.
No,
One of the great moments, great entrance.
Also with the Rock.
Also with the Rock.
Speaking of the Rock,
And of course the Rock immediately cuts him down, and Jericho does the crybaby face, which is talked about greatly in his book. But Jericho is there at the what we call the later part of the Attitude Era, but again, someone who really took the no boundaries approach and just made it part of his own, part of him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a just a solid mid Carter, and he had the right, which isn't
an insulting term like some people like to think it is now.
Yeah, no,
Daniel Bryan's going back to the mid card. There's like two main event spots.
Yeah,
you're still making money.
Mid card is still on TV every week.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know,
and as the Attitude Era proved, you need that mid card, or else it's just some great stuff at the top and nothing at the bottom.
Yeah, but he had, you know, he had a feud with China that should never have worked. Which was absolutely ridiculous.
But it was entertaining.
It was entertaining as hell because he was such a good, smarmy little punk that you really wanted to see her kick his ass.
And all the stuff with Stephanie.
Yeah.
His feuds with Stephanie.
All the different ways he could come up with to call her a slut. Like, probably my favorite was when it's him and The Rock talking trash to like Stephanie and Shane and Booker T at the same time, and it's just amazing.
And Jericho and The Rock just really had an in ring chemistry and both the promos, and work rate that just was still to this day. I love going back and watching some of that stuff. Another name
absolutely
I want to throw out there, because I think he is absolutely one of the all-time greats, is Kurt Angle.
The Olympic hero.
At that point, he comes in. He starts wrestling 98 is when starts transitioning and trains and everything. And again, I remember watching the 96 Olympics and was like, oh, Kurt Angle, he's an American hero. I mean, I remember that. I also remember Mark Henry announcing to Greg Gumbel at the, I think, 96 Olympics that he had just signed a 10-year deal with the WWF, and Greg Gumbel changed the subject he just brought up Nazis or
something. So anyway, how about that Kurt Angle?
But Angle was one of those, every Olympics, there's kind of those national heroes that get thrown up the pop charts there, and Angle was one of them. And the first thing he does, I'm going to go into pro wrestling.
Yeah. After winning, as I don't know if he's mentioned it before, but winning the Olympic gold with a broken neck.
Right.
Then he transitions right into pro wrestling after a couple years of training and comes in as such a dick.
Yeah.
And because he's this Olympic gold hero, he comes in and he's kind of this. He's this smarmy Hulk Hogan where he's, you know, you got to drink your milk and do your
intensity,
training.
Intensity, integrity, and intelligence.
Yes, the three I's. God, got to love the three I's. And, you know, you can all do it. and you just want to see him get his butt kicked, right. But he hardly ever did because he could go.
Because he was good. I mean, this is why, again, I think Angle is one of the best wrestlers of all time. And
absolutely.
How, what an amazing, he gets the business. He is serious. Mm-hmm. He is, you'd think he could really defeat you. But also the humor.
Yeah. I mean,
he worked in he's, during this era is amazing and funny stuff.
Yeah. He's this goofy, you know, doofus almost, mm-hmm. but then when it's time to get down to business, he will. But then he'll also, you know, be just such a buffoon, uh-huh. You know, as all the great heels do. You know, you gotta show that ass, mm-hmm. Figuratively speaking.
So I think he is again working. It's weird to say again that he's a mid-carder. That term is so weird, but he worked in that second tier.
He was the mid-carder
that made that the Attitude Era fun to watch every week. The other, and we're going to get into it here a little bit now, is we could probably devote a longer time to it, but we'll squeeze it in here. Is the women of the Attitude Era?
Yeah.
That's the other thing, that when you think the Attitude Era, if the Attitude Era was going now, we'd see a lot more of AJ Lee and Caitlyn than we do now.
Yes.
There would not be jean shorts on.
No, there would. No, they would be.
As revealing as that can be at some time.
Yeah, but no. Oh, I mean, they would have been in thongs this entire time.
The Attitude Era every week was like, there was always that segment that you knew was just like a living, breathing Maxim magazine photo shoot.
Yeah.
It was just in front of you. Brawn panties matches, mud matches. Yep. Demeaning. I get it. So degrading, so objectifying,
totally objectifying women, just making it
totally
like,
get that.
Like, this woman's purpose solely to show off her boobs.
Totally,
that's
get
the only reason this
how that
here.
May have set back female wrestling. I think it did. I say with a smile, but it did, because now, you know, you can watch some of these. They are some talented workers. That's the one thing I think going with TNA is
their women's division.
Mickie James is gone now, but Mickie James is. I love watching her wrestle. Gail Kim and Awesome Kong when she was there in her failed Karma run, which is unfortunate. I hope she gets another shot. But there's women that can go.
Yes.
On the indies, for years, I love watching Allison Danger and Melissa Anderson and Portia Perez, and there's some of these great names. We're both a fan of Thunder Kitty, who started in Millennium Pro Wrestling. She's not started just there, but we met her there, and she's working her way up at Resistance Pro. So I am totally supportive.
Yes.
And a fan, as you know, of the female wrestling movement.
Yes, no, absolutely.
But the Attitude Era.
But, oh, my God.
So, Stacey Keibler, to this day, is one of my all-time favorites simply because of the stuff that happened in the Attitude Era.
No, it's
my childish, juvenile perviness.
I remember Sable with the hand pasties.
With the hand pasties.
Is one of the defining moments of my puberty. Just because I'm like, oh my God, this is on my TV.
Here, along comes about 93 or 93, 94. What is it? Along comes Sonny.
Yeah, definitely.
Tammy Sitch, and who we, of course, have both worked with now. Yes. Interesting side stories. But that was a game changer. That's why I to this day give Sonny, Tammy Sitch credit and to believe she should be a Hall of Famers, because she definitely did bring something, and she also understands the business and knows how to put a match together and be a part of a match.
She
wasn't just candy.
No,
but
she definitely helped pave the way.
You have to remember what came before.
Yeah.
Which was not much.
Moolah. Wendy Richter,
Rockin' Robin,
yeah,
Leilani Kai, Jumping Bomb Angels,
yes,
Bertha Faye,
yeah,
no. Bull Nakano, Lundra Blaze. This is what had been on TV. Medusa was kind of the best, you know, and Missy Hyatt coming on, and you know, Elizabeth, but she wasn't. Yeah, I never for one second thought she could pose a threat in a ring.
No.
That had what come before. Then all of a sudden, Sunny comes along. She's at one point one of the most downloaded women. And then so it kind of naturally transitions into the Attitude Era, where now you got all these girls. You got Terry Runnels. You got the Cat. You got, what are some of the other names?
Eventually you had Lita. Can't forget. And
Dawn Marie.
And my, you know, my all-time favorite women wrestler for many, many reasons, the also Hall of Famer, Trish Stratus.
Trish Stratus.
The greatest ever.
Who is who I'd say is the greatest ever because of the transition she made.
Yeah, who she? I mean, she really changed. She was the game changer because she took it. You know, she was Sunny if Sunny could wrestle. I mean, yeah, like absolutely. Really wrestle.
Well, absolutely, she was the TNA of TNA.
Yeah, came. I mean, I remember her when she first came out, and I was like, "Oh, that's interesting."
Yeah, short skirt and a long jacket, she comes out and then turned herself into, one of the, if not the top female wrestler.
Yeah,
of all
she
time.
Got it, and she could really go.
Yeah,
her feud with Lita. I mean,
absolutely. But one of the.
But then there's your favorite moment.
One of the most notorious, yep. infamous moments, and you knew it was coming. You knew it was building up to it. Because I'm even, actually that came after WrestleMania 2000, but is Armageddon, December 1999. That's the pay-per-view where the cat, Stacy Carter,
Mrs. Lawler,
reveals herself to a international pay-per-view audience.
Oh, was she not supposed to do that?
Yeah, and it had been coming for a while. No pun intended.
Surprised it took that long.
Well, but you had heard rumors it was going to happen.
Yeah,
the first intentional. "Quote unquote intentional nudity was going to happen, and boom, she's the one that drew the short straw or something. Yeah. I don't know.
she lost that game of rock paper scissors with Sable in the back.
Because Sable had come damn well close, and now to get the leg up, boom, she does it. And that too,
and is promptly fired.
and is promptly fired. Well, it took about 2001. She's fired. She goes into a feud with Terry Runnels, and so I mentioned WrestleMania 2000. She became cat fight.
Yeah, she became China's mini-me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Also,
that's right. And so, I don't know how to describe the legacy of the women of the Attitude Era.
It's not necessarily
a positive.
It started off not positive, but then I think when you got
continue. I'm gonna let you argue for it.
It definitely had its roots in just objectification and here's more boobs.
Yeah.
But then when Lita and Trish and Victoria Ivory. Thank you. That's what I was thinking of.
Last year at Wrestle Reunion, I rode up in an elevator with.
Yeah.
And dear God, she's a gorgeous woman. She's about 46, 47 now or something like that. She is in great shape. She could kick my ass.
Because, those are the women who, and even, we'll give it credit. China started girling it up a bit and became. A solid hand in the ring.
Yeah.
And somebody kind of went, oh, wait, maybe if we have these hot chicks and they can wrestle, it'll be even better.
Yeah.
And it was. So, certainly it kind of started out as just, hey, let's get these hot chicks to roll around and slap each other for no reason. Jacqueline Moore should be mentioned also. She was part of all of that too.
And the negative impact of it is, nowadays, it's really tough to get anything going on a national level for women's wrestling because people look back at that era and show us your poppies.
Yeah.
And it becomes that. So you can't build, AJ Lee is great in the ring. I love watching what she's doing and what she can do in the ring. And I think there's some other great workers coming up behind her. We're looking forward to Paige, as she's called in NXT, hitting the big time. But every time you watch, you kind of can't help but think, oh, if only Eve Torres had been in the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
There's
a couple out there. Layla.
Yeah. Expose and all that stuff was the stuff with Kelly and Brooke Adams was the tail end of not the Attitude Era, but the before the PG era hit, so to speak. And Melina.
But still, if they'd come around even 5 years before.
Five years before, it's
just
a different.
Imagine.
Different.
Yeah, imagine Kelly in the Attitude Era.
Yeah, that she might have been the first one to go nude then.
Yeah.
That'd be my thought.
Or if Maria had been around in the Attitude Era.
Yeah, that probably would have been what had happened. So again, there's a dark side and a positive side. Yeah. And of course, we as men probably saw the positive side a little bit more. But it added, again, every week. Here's part of the success of the Attitude Era is it kind of transcended wrestling. Non-wrestler wrestling fans are going to show up because, these hot chicks, you're coming on panties.
Oh, yeah. No, I read 19, 20-year-old single Joe was like, I want to see some dudes beat each other up, and I might see some boobs too.
Yeah, what a great Monday night.
What's not to like about any of that?
What's not to like? So, again, I don't think that could happen again.
No.
This is not, I mean, just the whole Attitude Era package. We're going to talk more about the legacy, negative and positive, in the fourth episode of this series, but just wanted to bring up the women now, because I'm looking at the card. We're going to get to, in our closing moments here, talk about WrestleMania 2000, April 2nd. In 2000, and it just maybe you're looking at the Cat versus Terry on the card, maybe think you cannot talk about the Attitude Era and talk about the contributions that they made, really.
Yeah, no,
they're part of it too.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're part of the ratings. Yeah,
they were there.
They did great with what they were given.
The show I went to, Sable versus Jackie in an arm wrestling match.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So let's talk about WrestleMania 2000, because a lot of things are changing at this point. DX is no longer really DX. The Nation of Domination has kind of faded away. Now it's all about the corporate champions and McMahon and the family. Now Shane's involved. Paul White, Big Show, has shown up. First of the, he and Jericho, kind of the first of the big WCW.
They jumped. Yeah,
the young guys kind of going, well, these old guys are hogging the spotlight, we're out of here.
Now Big Show, he came around. He was Mr. McMahon's secret weapon against Austin to prevent him from getting his WrestleMania 15 title shot, and failed. But then he got up there, and he and The Rock had a good little rivalry going in coming out of the Royal Rumble, and this is all being done while Austin is on the shelf.
Right.
Well, you know, he hurt his neck. His neck had been hurt, obviously. And the time had come where it needed some serious work. And so, you know, Survivor Series, he gets, quote unquote, run down by a car.
Right. As you do.
Damn Rikishi.
I'm looking at Rikishi and his ass on the back of the screen here.
That is what really led to The Rock becoming. You know, he had to fill those shoes, and he did. I mean, he at his peak, he was as hot as Austin had ever been.
Right. Do you think there was any point? It's hard to not factor in the injuries, but at any point during this era, did The Rock surpass Austin?
I mean, maybe
they're on equal footing for a lot of things, I might argue, but. But I still think of Austin as the number one.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I mean, you'd have to go back and run the numbers and look at, you know,
let's pay-per-view
rates and, you know, stuff like that.
Just in terms of perception.
But, yeah, but, you know, but I don't think Rock ever surpassed him. But by the time, I mean, to skip ahead just a little bit further, I mean, obviously we'll end on 2000, but to skip 1 year ahead, by the time WrestleMania 17 came around and they were going in, you know, they were equal.
Yeah.
You know, they were both faces. It was Hogan Warrior. But I mean, it was also almost Hogan. Really?
Right. Now that makes sense to me. And then in WrestleMania 17, Rock Hogan, which we're going to talk about next time.
Yeah.
Because that
was 18.
Excuse me, 18.
Get your math right.
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm looking at my notes here. But we're going to talk about that and that, how that kind of moved on. But for at this point in time, the Rock and Sock hadn't come yet. All that stuff hadn't come yet. We're looking at this. And also one of the legacies there of WrestleMania 2000 and legacy of the Attitude Era is tables and ladders and chairs and crazy things. And this is the triangle ladder match for the Tag Team Championship of the World, the Dudley Boys, Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian, one of the all-time greatest matches ever.
Absolutely.
Hands down.
Yeah. No, because it was so innovative. And those three teams, whenever they got together, you know, whether it was one-on-one, you know, there was the Hardys and Dudley's in Madison Square Garden, and they had a fantastic match. And then the Hardys and Edge and Christian, I mean, they were just all over the place. Then you get all three of them together, and
again, talking about chemistry.
Yeah,
talking about just, people finding them.
They just had it,
finding the groove,
and you know, because they each had their niche. You know, Bubba and Devon, they were the guys that they just beat the crap out of you. Jeff and Matt were jumping all over the place. Edge and Christian were kind of right in between, you know. But yeah. But they were also the sneaky, smarmy, sneaky, chicken funny, shit heels who, yeah. you know.
And
they were hilarious, posing for 5 seconds and all that yeah. greatness.
Hardys are from the backyard to the big stage, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And they put on one of the most memorable matches, which is still, I think, those series of matches they've had have some of the iconic imagery. Edge yeah. doing the spear, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, they that, you know, the kind of the trilogy.
Yeah,
there, you know, if this and then the first two TLC matches are just mm-hmm. bar none. I mean, you know, and this ending with that great picture of the table set on top of the two ladders with Edge mm-hmm. and Christian standing on top of it with their belts. I mean, it's just gorgeous.
Kind of set the bar for any of those matches going forward, yeah. you know, going on. So there we are. We're at WrestleMania 2000. And by this point, the Attitude Era has overcome WCW Nitro, even though Nitro was still going pretty strong, too, pulling in numbers, too. It was a golden age for wrestling. But
yeah,
by 2000,
it wasn't,
though,
quite dead yet, but it was
by 2000, the
slowly starting to circle the
wheels
drain.
Had come off the wagon there for WCW and WWF at the time. Their Attitude Era, that whole thing had worked, and they were on top of the game, and top of the hill, and we're going to find out in Episode 3 what did they do when they reached the top, and that's where we'll pick up next time. So, this has been Wrestling Viewpoint Network's look at the Attitude Era, Episode 2. 3 will be next week. Do not forget to follow us on Twitter at WrestlingVN, and I forgot last week, too, Joe, they can follow you on Twitter at...
at JoeRue23.
JoeRue23. Follow me at Ken Napzok. That's NAPZOK. Find us on Facebook. And please, if you're listening to us on iTunes, subscribe, like, and review, and do all that good stuff. It is vital to our success in the iTunes world. This is the digital broadcasting era. So for Joe Ruggiero, I'm Ken Napzok. This has been the Wrestling Viewpoint Network. We will see you next week with another look at the Attitude Era. See ya.